content is not just king, but it's everything. Everything you do is content in some form or fashion. Everyone is consuming content. And if you're not publishing great content, as things get more granular and more competitive, you're going to get lost in the shuffle. So you have to create content people want and choose to consume.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Destination Marketing Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Stoker. As many of you know, I own an advertising agency that helps destinations get the right message to the right people at the right time. And we've got a wonderful guest today. His name is Stuart Butler, and he is the Chief Marketing Officer of Visit Myrtle Beach. Stuart, welcome to the show.
Hello. How's it going?
Great, great. And we're excited to have you. You know, you're one of the unique guests that we have on the show that I've experienced your destination as a tourist. And so I've got some unique insight from my trip, and we can talk about some of the things that I found when I was there. It's going to be a fun conversation.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it and hearing a little more about your experience when you came to Myrtle Beach recently.
Yeah, it'll be a fun conversation. To preface it, and I think this'll maybe ease your mind even a bit. We had a wonderful time. We had an amazing trip. So this isn't going to be an inquisition here, an intervention. We're going to talk about
the destination. No, good.
Yeah, we're going to talk about some of the wonderful things that you guys are doing there in Myrtle Beach.
Great.
Well, before we do, though, we've got some icebreaker questions we like to ask as we dive in. And the first one is, what is your dream destination, Stuart? You live in an amazing place like Myrtle Beach, but we want to know, if you could go anywhere in the world, where would it be?
Yeah, like you said, Myrtle Beach is a great destination. We call ourselves permanent vacationers here. I was in an Uber last week, and the guy said, you know, we're really blessed. We get to live permanently in a place people pay a lot of money to come visit for 2 weeks a year. So I love this destination, and I don't get to vacation that often because I work so hard. But if I did, it would be December 25th of any year in a little village called Horseman Den in England, which is my mom's house where I grew up. And I would be eating Christmas dinner surrounded by family, because to me, travel is more about the people you travel with than the destination itself. So Christmas dinner is always the best meal of the year, especially when my mom cooks it. So that's where I travel to right now if I could.
You know what?
That's time travel as well.
You time travel. That's a good answer. You know, most of the people that I ask that question to, they can narrow it down to the country or the region. Mm-hmm. You've narrowed it down to a very specific address here at your mom's house.
Yeah, I would give you the specific address if I didn't think people would mob my mom's house.
Well, with the following we have, I mean, she would never get any rest because we've just got millions and millions of listeners that would probably stop by.
Yeah, especially for Christmas dinner.
Yeah, exactly. So I love that. Maybe what's a memory from, or a tradition from Christmas at your mom's house?
Well, we have a lot of traditions, some of which I've brought, you know, I've lived in America for 20 years, so I brought a lot of those traditions with me. But my favorite is probably the Christmas crackers. So I don't know if you've seen these, but some people call them snappers or poppers, but it's basically a paper cracker that two people pull either end and it snaps. It makes a little popping noise, and inside has a little riddle or a joke, has a paper hat that you wear and a little toy of some kind. So Every Christmas photo that exists in our household is us wearing our paper hats from our Christmas crackers.
Okay, the Christmas crackers. I haven't seen that, so I'll have to look up a video of that.
Yeah, they've started to sell them more in the U.S. It's becoming more popular. I know Target stores tend to carry them now. A lot of like world markets, things like that will carry them. So I'm trying to tell everyone I know and share the tradition with the folks in my circle.
Great. Yeah, I'll keep my eyes open for that. Well, let's talk, Stuart, also about maybe one of your favorite trips you've ever been on, a vacation that really stands out to you.
Yeah, I think the one that really stands out, and the one I definitely want to recreate, is a trip to Italy, to Cinque Terre. I went there in college with my then girlfriend, now wife, who was the reason I moved to the U.S. She's from South Carolina. So we took a week-long trip to Italy, and we went to Venice, which is beautiful. We went to Florence. But my favorite was Cinque Terre. Just walking along these little quaint villages and along a cliff face is just, I don't know, it's very humbling, very grounding. It's a place I want to take my kids to for sure.
Yeah, is Cinque Terre on the coast?
It is, yeah. I think it's on the northern kind of Riviera of Italy, if my geography's right. It's been a while since I've been, but it's these collection of little villages or hamlets that you can walk between. The closest to are like a 20-minute walk along a cliff face. The longest is a little over an hour, but you can kind of spend 2 or 3 days staying in little hostels or bed and breakfasts in each of the villages. And some of the best food I've ever eaten. There was one in particular, I forget which of the villages it was at, but it's probably the best meal I've ever had. And it was a very simple salad. They literally went out back and plucked some lettuce and tomatoes fresh from where they were growing it. So true farm to table.
Oh, and then
they put it on a plate with no dressing, and it was so delicious. You didn't need dressing. And then the main dish was fresh pasta, freshly made pasta, like spaghetti pasta, and like a fish, a medley of different fish that was fresh caught that day. And oh my Lord, it was, you didn't need seasoning. You didn't need anything. And we actually enjoyed it so much that we went back to the exact same place the next day and had the exact same meal. Cause it was life changing. It was great.
Yeah. It's funny that you mention, you said earlier that fan or who you're with has so much impact on the quality of the vacation. Right. And you mentioned your mom's house for one, and you mentioned a trip with your then girlfriend, now wife. It is an interesting tradition, I would say, around relationships. Even when you look at a marriage, a honeymoon is a tradition to go on when you get married. Travel is such an integral part of building human relationships, you know, when you go places together. I know that my wife and I can have, you know, the craziness of chasing kids around and everything throughout the year, and then we go on a trip together, and that's when a lot of our focus on our relationship happens. It really is a fascinating way to improve your connections with the people that you're closest to.
It really is. It's a place, or it's a time when you really get to know people. And I think it was Mark Twain, or someone said something along the lines of, you know, you really don't know if you like or don't like someone until you've traveled with them. Like, that's when you really find out. So I think for me, with the trip to Italy with my then girlfriend, now wife, that's where we really got to know each other. We'd been dating for a few months before that in college, but that's where we really got to, you know, share our deepest, darkest secrets and fall in love. So I think it is something where you get out of the routine and you open your mind to new experiences. And, you know, I think you create memories because it's something new, and it's the way the brain works. It remembers stuff the first time a lot more than it does things that you've done repeatedly every day. So,
yeah. Yeah, it's also kind of funny how the romance of it, when you try something again years later, you know, I've had restaurants that I'm just like, oh, that was the best restaurant ever. And I go later in a different circumstance, like maybe I'll go for work or something like that. And it just doesn't taste the same. It's just not the same as it was when I was, you know, alone with my wife on that vacation. So, yeah, it's fascinating what travel, especially with a loved one, will do for your memory. Anyway, I don't mean to romance about travel in general throughout our discussion today, but it just kind of hit me based on what you said.
Yeah.
Well, Stuart, I want to let everyone that's listening kind of get to know you and your background and maybe how you ended up in the role you're in today. You gave us a little sneak peek of it, that your wife is from South Carolina, and that explains you getting all the way to South Carolina from your birthplace. So would you mind kind of walking us through a little bit of your background?
Yeah. So like most people I've found, I kind of fell backwards into this industry. I've only been in the DMO space for 4 months. I'm brand new. I came from the agency side. So I was sitting on your side of the fence for the last 20 years running a agency and software company in the hotel space. So I've been involved in tourism, but that was all by happenstance as well. I actually started out, my undergrad degree was physics with space science. So I always kind of had this one eye on America. I wanted to work for NASA. And then in my final year of college, I did a computer programming project. I built a robot arm and had to learn how to program it. And my professor showed me this magical thing called the internet that I'd used email up until that point, but I'd never really figured out that you can learn literally anything you want to from the internet. So that just blew my mind. And I went from thinking space was where I wanted to be to the internet was where I wanted to be, because space is cool and you can discover it, but you could create things on the internet. And I've always been a creator. I like creating new solutions to age old problems. So I enrolled in a computer science conversion postgrad degree, which is where I met my girlfriend at the time, who was from America studying in England. And then we dated for a year there. We dated for a year long distance, where we were 4,000 miles apart. And then that really tests a relationship, and it makes you really understand whether or not that's what you want it from a person, from a soulmate. So then finally I came to visit her in South Carolina, and she was in Columbia, South Carolina at the time. And I said, I like South Carolina. It's got a lot going for it. The people are the friendliest I've ever met, but I don't think Columbia's for me. So we took a day trip to Myrtle Beach, actually an overnight trip to Myrtle Beach while I was visiting her. And I remember sitting in Peach's Corner on the Ocean Boulevard, and it's the first time I've ever eaten a foot-long hot dog. And I just sat there thinking, I could do this all day,
every
day.
It was the hot dog that put you over the edge.
It was the hot dog at Peach's Corner that sold me. And so I made a compromise, which is, this is the trick and the secret to a good marriage. We made a proper middle compromise. So I decided to move 4,000 miles to Myrtle Beach. She moved 200 miles from Columbia to Myrtle Beach, and we called that the middle. And that's how we compromise in our relationship.
You're a smart man. Yeah, you're a smart man with how you structure those compromises.
Yeah. So it's worked out really well. And I was fortunate enough to get in at the entry level of a software company / agency and build that up to a multi-million dollar company that went from regional to national in the course of a few years. And then we sold the software off to a company called Jonas Hospitality back at the end of last year. And I decided it was time to put an end to one chapter in my life and start a new one. And I'd happened to be on the board of directors for our Chamber of Commerce and CVB. It's a joint chamber and CVB. I'd been the marketing chair for the last 2 years. And so I'd gotten to work with this team a lot and really become very fond of them and what they were doing. And the job opening came along at just the right time. And I decided to roll the dice and jump to the, I don't know if it's the dark side or the light side, but I jumped ship to the other side. And I'm having a blast. It's 4 months in and we're having a lot of fun shaking things up.
Yeah, I got to ask, what is that like going from the agency side to the destination side, and maybe the pros and cons of what you see on each side?
Yeah, well, I came in with my eyes sort of open because I'd been on the board of directors. But I will say this, I've never been in a role in my career where it was more fast paced and yet slow moving at the same time. The amount, the volume of things that are coming across my desk on a daily basis is just incredible. We're doing so many amazing things. And, you know, we're a pretty large destination. You know, we're up there in terms of budget and we have a lot of stakeholders that we have to keep happy. But there's bureaucracy too, right? So that means that I'm used to being in the for-profit world where I could make a decision and have it executed and in production the next day. And you know, that's not how this space works. So we're trying to deconstruct certain things and reinvent how we do things. We're trying to break down some silos and empower our team to not have to ask permission to just do things and move a little faster. I really like a team that is scrappy. And what I mean by scrappy is it's kind of a word that's a combination of the two definitions. So it means both made up of scraps, like very versatile and have a lot of different skills, but also a little feisty and willing to roll up your sleeves and figure it out and fight to be competitive to win. So we have a team here that, you know, can write and do video and do a little graphic design and do a little HTML. And so they're multifaceted and we're just trying to encourage and empower all of them to just elevate their game and think outside the box. And not the big thing I think that's held a lot of destinations back is that everyone just thinks of themselves as a destination. And so they focus on things like the lodging. And we think of ourselves as a lifestyle brand. You know, what is it that people see in themselves in the destination that's similar? And how do we tap into that? So we go from being just something they care about while they're planning and consuming a trip to something that they care about 24/7, 365. That's the shift we're making right now.
I want to come back to this because I think you said something really interesting there. Before I do, though, I love that you said that scrappy is an important component for you and your team. We have 6 core values here at Relic, and scrappy is one of them. And we talk a lot about how job descriptions sometimes are just out the window. Let's just all work together to get it done, whatever we have to do, you know. I think it's an important thing especially if you have a growing organization with lofty goals, you've got to have a scrappy team.
Yeah, because it's changing so much, right? I think that we're moving at the speed of digital and it's faster, it's more accelerated than anything that's ever happened in the history of humanity before. And if you're not constantly learning and evolving your skill set, you're going to be obsolete very, very quickly. So you have to be scrappy. So really, when I'm hiring, and we literally just hired a new creative director yesterday. But when I'm looking to hire team members, the priority for me is, are they scrappy? I'd rather have a scrappy person than anyone with experience or a skill set that they already have. I want people that can figure it out. So when I go to them and say, we need to do this, or I read this article and this is the next trend we need to be on top of, I can just throw it at them and know that they're going to go do the research. They're going to watch YouTube videos. They're going to do tutorials and how to's. And they'll come back to me and say, you know, I didn't have a clue what you were talking about a week ago, but now I'm an expert on this. And here's what we're going to do. And here's the plan. That's how we all need to work in this modern digital age.
And I suspect that a little bit of that scrappy mentality comes from the things that you had to do on the agency side before you ended up on the dark side, as you called it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, when I started the company, we were, you know, less than 10 employees. My first few weeks there, we were making layoffs and I was almost on the chopping block. It's, you know, funny how life could have gone in a very different direction had that happened, because I got my visa through the job. So I would have maybe been packed off back to England, but we were making cash calls to our clients at the time. It was an insane time. You know, it was the early 2000s, the dot-com boom had kind of come and gone. And now we were having to reinvent ourselves. We had some software products that weren't well organized. And so we really had to figure it out. So I started out as a developer and then ended up as a project manager, and then ended up as a kind of a sales engineer and a salesperson and an account manager. And then I said, hey, we're doing all this stuff with software and we're building websites, but we need to get traffic to these websites. So let's go figure out email marketing, because that seems like the best way to drive traffic. And then let's figure out search engine optimization. So we kind of built these vertical solutions out of nothing. We just created it with the team we had. We went and rolled up our sleeves and read a lot and listened to a lot of things and watched videos and just figured it out. And then we went and hired talent that had the skill sets that we could, you know, tap into. But it was, you know, built from the ground up on a shoestring budget. And then we sold, you know, last year for several million dollars to a global public company. So
fantastic.
We had to be scrappy.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a great trait to have. And I think every destination should be full of scrappy people. Let's go back though to something that you mentioned that I said I'd come back to, and that's, you said that you don't want to just be a destination as Myrtle Beach. You want to be a lifestyle brand. And so before we dive into that, I want to talk a little bit about my experience at Myrtle Beach.
Right.
And then let's talk about how close you feel like my experience is to where you're trying to go as a brand. And I would love to look at that bridge and see. And my experience is just anecdotal, right? I'm not speaking for the masses as they attend Myrtle Beach, but I do think it would be kind of a fascinating look at what my experience was compared to where you're trying to go. So my family and I, I'll even back up a little bit more. My wife and I have been making our way up the East Coast. So we started with Savannah, Beaufort, Hilton Head. Then we went, our next trip was, because everybody said, if you liked this, you got to try Charleston. So then we went to Charleston the next year, my wife and I. And then this year, as we were trying to figure out what to do, we wanted to do something as a family. And I didn't know much about Myrtle Beach. I mean, it's a name that I had heard a lot, and I knew that there was great beaches there and everything, but I didn't have a lot of context. And so as we were looking, I started to, I actually looked at Hilton Head first. And all their family style resorts were taken. They were booked. And so then I started working my way up the coast. I was like, well, I've heard about Myrtle Beach. Let's take a look. And it seemed like every resort had multiple bedroom cottages, had a water park in the middle of it, and had great access to the beach, right? And so as I looked at that, I said, man, this would be a great place to take my family. And we booked a place. It was the Sheraton Resort Villas that were down near Broadway, which we'll talk about that too. I thought that was such an interesting part of the destination. But we booked that trip and went there not really knowing what to expect. Now, the good news is I met you between when I booked the trip and when I arrived, and you gave me some great tips on things to do when we were there. But what we found when we got there was that it is a destination tailored, in my mind, to full family experiences. And when I went to Hilton Head and Savannah and Charleston, they were all wonderful places for me to go with my wife, wonderful romantic destinations. I didn't see the quantity of family activities at those destinations that I found at Myrtle Beach. It seemed like on every corner, there was things that me and my family could do. We were there for 6 days, And I don't think we even scratched the surface on the activities that were available. We went to the beach a couple of days. We went to the Ripley's Aquarium, which was fantastic. We went to a place called Wonderworks, which might be one of the coolest places I've ever walked into.
I love Wonderworks, yeah.
and so what I walked away with was Myrtle Beach is the quintessential family destination. Now, you talked about you want Myrtle Beach to become a lifestyle brand. So how does my experience fit into where you're trying to go? And then is there a gap that of where you're still trying to get to that maybe we didn't recognize as visitors?
Yeah, I'm glad you described it that way, because it's exactly what we're trying to do here. And what we've really always done, you know, think about this. Myrtle Beach isn't that old as a destination. It's less than 100 years old as a city, as a municipality. And it really started in the kind of the 20s and 30s as a meeting place for the rich and famous. They put a big hotel here, one of the biggest on the eastern coast, called the Ocean Forest Hotel. And it was put there because it was halfway between Miami and New York. So it was kind of a good stopping place. So that's kind of how we became a mecca for tourism. And what's interesting about our destination is we're eclectic. We're really a melting pot of people. The residents here, over 90% of the residents here did not grow up here. They moved here. And the vast majority of them vacationed here before they moved here, which is really cool. And it's a multi-generational place because, like you said, you barely scratch the surface. I've lived here for 20 years. There's restaurants and attractions and things I haven't experienced yet because there's just so many. We have over 1,700 restaurants in our market.
Wow.
And there's new ones every year. So when you say Myrtle Beach, there's some nomenclature that we need to clear up. One is that it's the city of Myrtle Beach. But when we're talking about Myrtle Beach, we see the city of Myrtle Beach as the front porch, but we're much bigger as a destination. We're actually 60 miles of coastline from on the south end of Pawleys Island, all the way up to Little River on the North Carolina border. And then inland too, we have some really quaint little villages or towns like Conway and Aynor and Lawrence. But we're really marketing 14 unique communities that are all offer something a little different for different people. But because of that, because we have these 14 communities with something a little different to offer, and we're all made up of a melting pot of people from diverse backgrounds, from all kinds of countries, we really are a place where anyone can find where they belong. And so we define family as whatever you define family as. So in your case, it's that, you know, traditional man, woman, husband, wife, and two kids kind of a family, right? But your family could be your sisters that you grew up with in your sorority, or it could be your golf buddies, or it could be your school friends from when you're in middle school. It doesn't matter what you define as your family. You can come here and have fun and find something for you. So we're really leaning into that. We went through a brand revamp over the last 2 years during COVID. And we kind of came to the conclusion that Myrtle Beach is exactly what it's always been. We appeal to families, whatever you define as your family, but you're a place where you can come as you are. You won't get judged. You will find your tribe and you will belong here. And that's what people have recognized for decades. And that's why our repeat visitation is like 67%.
Wow.
So you don't get 2/3 of people coming back year after year unless you nail the experience.
Well, and you mentioned that, you know, you no matter how you define family, you come as you are and you'll find your tribe. Well, that has a lot to do with that Myrtle Beach is a melting pot of people from all walks of life and all around the world. Because people have come, they've found their tribe and they've stayed. I think that speaks to kind of the culture of Myrtle Beach. And, you know, one of the things you mentioned, you said it's I think you said 14 communities that make up Myrtle Beach as a whole. But then even within those communities, there are destinations within themselves, right? So next to our resort was a place called, what was it called?
Broadway at the Beach. Yeah.
Broadway at the Beach. That's right. I knew it was Broadway. I couldn't think of the second half of it, but they had, I mean, there's a lake in the middle of it where there are boats, these racing boats that do these amazing turns and spins and stuff in the water. And you hear people screaming as they're going on the boats. And then all around it, there's the Wonderworks, there's the aquarium, there's so many things all the way around.
Yeah, there's a Quickie Mart. If you're a Simpsons fan, we have like a Simpsons 4D show and an actual Quickie Mart, the first ever reproduction of the Quickie Mop from Simpsons, which is
really cool. See, we missed that. We didn't even see that while we were there. There's the giant Ferris wheel. You can go in
and
buy
a Duff beer and Homer Simpson paraphernalia. It's great. And a squishy, all of it.
I'll have to get back to that next time. So we spent at least, and by the way, dozens and dozens of restaurants around there as well. Mm-hmm. We spent probably 40% of our time actually at Broadway on the Beach while we were there. And I think that's another thing that fascinated me about Myrtle Beach, that even within these 14 communities, there's these little high density tourism attractions within Myrtle Beach. The challenge in my mind, if I was in your role, is how do I have an overarching brand of Myrtle Beach and get all these kind of micro attractions throughout the destination to be on brand and coexist together?
Yeah, it's a challenge, but it's one that I relish. We're going through some transformational times right now here in Myrtle Beach. With me coming in and kind of looking at destination marketing a little different, trying to look at us as a lifestyle, not a destination, and also changing our fundamental, the economics of our business. So I think I just got back from Esto in LA, which was my first foray into the industry. And I think one of the things I came back with was a hunch I had before I went, but the event really confirmed it, which is I felt like a lot of folks in our industry are so focused on what one of my board members has criticized us for in the past. We're majoring in our minors, meaning we're so focused on things like what is our membership structure look like? How do we generate more funding? You know, how do we advocate with the city or the state legislator to get more tax dollars? We're spending so much time on the economics that we're not spending as much time on how do we create a great tool or utility for a guest or a visitor to discover, plan, book, experience, remember, share. You know, this entire journey of the consumer, how do we touch them across that entire life cycle of the journey? And so one of the things I've done over the last couple of months, I spent the first month or two really listening to a lot of folks and trying to understand the complexities of how everything's intertwined, because it's really, you know, you step over to your left and something pops up on the right you didn't know was connected. It's we create a very tangled web, I guess, in this space. But I've deconstructed our membership. We found some new revenue streams that we're going to lock in for 5 years, which takes the burden off of our members. And so one of the things that's allowing us to do is democratize our membership. Because up until now, it's not cheap to join our CVB as a member. And so it creates this situation where we don't have all 1,700 restaurants that we can really promote, because there's only a finite number that are members. So we're changing this so that we can get all 1,700 members. And once we get all the attractions and all the restaurants and all the everything on board, I can really tell their stories. And then that leads to really where our philosophy is, which is we are ruthlessly focused on the consumer, not our member. Not that we're not focused on our member, but we believe we serve our members better or investors better by serving their customer. And so that philosophy allows us and frees us up to do a lot of interesting things in terms of content. And content and data and the product itself, those are the three pillars of our strategy.
Yeah, so I'm glad you bring up content, because you are doing some really unique things from a content perspective. Stuff that as I look at it, is so much more organic and doesn't have that call to action at the end, but instead it allows the quality of the content to provide an implied call to action. Tell me a little bit about some of the content projects that you're working on.
Yeah, so some of it I'll probably keep a little close to our chest. I might talk a little vaguely about it because it's
no problem.
Kind of novel. But in broad strokes, if we deconstruct the conventional wisdom, right? A lot of people look at paid, owned, and earned media as kind of the three pillars of what you're producing, right? And so a lot of DMOs over the years have really relied on the paid primarily, right? They'll get money and they're under this pressure to spend all that money. So they end up spending it on Google ads or display ads or whatever it is. And even if you, and I think we've kind of adopted that mindset even as we get into things like video content. So one of the things I noticed at Esto was people, you know, we've had this narrative about storytelling for a while, and we know that humans respond really well to stories. It really, it tugs on our emotions and it can compel us to do stuff. So people have understood that for a while in marketing, but how DMOs manifest that, I think is problematic because at the end of the day, they're still creating an ad. So we saw these award-winning videos at Esto where it was a family that was maybe traveling in an RV to this destination. And you're telling the story of family, but you still have to pay to get that in front of people. It's really just an elaborate iteration on a display ad. And once someone's seen it, they've consumed it, they don't really care about it beyond that consumption. And they're really just trying to get by it to get to the next content. And so if we look at consumer behavior and say, well, we know that it's going to be harder to reach audiences over time because there's more ad blockers, more third-party cookie challenges. We know that people like Google are getting bigger, and we know that they're going to charge more. Toll keepers historically always charge more. And then we also know that if you want to go after a specific demographic or audience, that's getting more fragmented. So you're going to have to get a little more granular in terms of your targeting if you want to reach a specific audience. So it's going to get more and more challenging and more expensive to pay to get in front of people. So we've kind of taken this quantum leap and said, well, rather than creating content that we have to pay to get in front of people and lease the land that that ad lives on, why don't we create content that people want to consume? Content that people choose to consume, content that people choose to share and that influences them, but it's content for consumption first. It's an advertisement second. That's the difference between what we're doing. So I'll give you an example from my former life, which is very similar to what you're doing here. And I think it illustrates a mistake that a lot of destinations are making. So at Fuel, which was my agency before, about 4 or 5 years ago, we were a very regional agency. And so we said, how do we stand out in the crowd? And it was when podcasting was really coming to the forefront, Serial and some other good shows, it really made it mainstream. And we were all consuming podcasts. So we said, this is untapped. No one's doing it. Let's create a podcast about hotel marketing. And we said, okay, if we're going to do that, we need to do it right. So we need to identify our audience and say, what did they value? Like, what is going to interest them? What is going to keep them coming back? Right. And so that could be education, but we felt like education alone wasn't enough. We had to be entertaining because we were also competing with every other podcast that was out there.
Right.
So we're competing for eyeballs and media attention with every other option out there. And there's more than there's ever been to compete with. So how do we stand out? So we created a podcast that was similar to yours. It wasn't interviews, but it was tangible tactics and trends for the hotel industry. But we did it with a comedic spin. We tried to be funny. We showed our personalities. We poked fun at each other. And we quickly grew an audience of thousands and thousands of listeners. And not once did we sell during that show. But we established ourselves as an authority. And by the time I left and we sold, we'd gone from a regional agency to a global agency. We'd grown several times over in terms of scale. And the only marketing we did was that podcast. It cost us $80 to start that podcast. We went and bought a Yeti mic and stuck it in the middle of a table. And by the end, every single sales lead we got was a result of that podcast.
That not a bad ROI, turning $80 into millions of dollars. Yeah. That's pretty good.
Yeah, it was great. But it started with that kernel of knowledge of we have to provide value, right? So I think the mistake a lot of DMOs are making, we're exploring podcasting right now as a channel for us, but the mistake I think a lot of DMOs are making is they haven't figured out what value they drive to their audience, right? So if we go back to the storytelling example of the video and telling a story of a family, where's the drama or the intrigue or the mystery or the hook that gets people compelled to want to keep coming back?
Right.
Where's the value that beyond watching it that first time? So with a podcast, I think a lot of folks will do the same where they'll interview local businesses in that's fine if your target audience is your stakeholders, right? If it's your locals, if it's your businesses, your investors, I think that does fine, but you're going to have a limited audience because most vacationers aren't going to go seek that. So how do you create a podcast that touches people beyond the destination? So what we're exploring is ideas where we're telling human stories that connect with people on a very rudimentary level that people want to tune into as entertainment that happens to be about Myrtle Beach. So Myrtle Right. Beach is kind of the backdrop, not the star of the show. That's where we're going, because we feel like if we can win the hearts and minds in terms of producing valuable content that people choose to listen to or watch or consume, Myrtle Beach will be there and will be imprinting Myrtle Beach in their minds 24/7, 365 versus just when they're actively looking for Myrtle Beach. So that's the difference.
Yeah, I love the way you look at that. And you broke it down between paid, earned, and owned media. And the place that I've found as I've gotten into destination marketing over the last 10 years, the owned media channels have not been nurtured, cultivated, right. And really there's been a lot left on the table there. It's the long game. Like, that's what I tell everybody when we're talking about owned media, is this is not a quick fix. You're not going to generate the audience that you want to generate in the first 30 days that you start this, or even the first 12 months that you start an owned media channel. But over the years, over time, you know, you can generate so much of an audience that you don't have to rent through paid media, right, someone else's audience in the future, right? And I love your approach to this. And this is why we've recommended that destinations get into podcasts and start podcasts for their own destinations. You're absolutely right about the storytelling aspect, and that it has to go deeper than just, hey, visit here because, right? Like, it has to tell a story. But it's a real cost efficient way to break into an owned media channel that is manageable. Whereas some of these high budget destinations, which I would probably put Myrtle Beach in, mm-hmm, certain scenarios compared to other destinations, a higher budget destination, where you can probably create larger scale owned media. And I won't let the cat out of the bag with some of the conversations that you and I have had, but you have the opportunity to do things that maybe other destinations don't. It can also be your email. It can also be your social media channels. But I would advise every destination listening to kind of follow your lead, Stuart, and focus on those owned media channels, whatever you're able to afford. And even though it's the long game, play the long game and build those audiences over time.
Yeah, 100%. I think if you look at Airbnb as an example, right? Airbnb, over 97% of their traffic comes direct because they've created a brand. And when I say we're creating a lifestyle brand, that's what I mean. You know, we want to be the place people look for us. And so Airbnb have done that creatively through content primarily, and through compelling content and telling stories and things like that. And I think we can do it. And we also need to, as an industry, start thinking a little differently about owned content and not saying that us and our agencies can do all of it, because you end up with a product that is, at the end of the day, still an advertisement, and it doesn't need to be that. It needs to be content that people want to consume. So you have to be a cathedral thinker, right? That's not a phrase I coined. There's other folks in the industry that use that, but you have to be someone that's thinking 5, 10, 20, 30 years. How do I build block by block an owned media asset or an ecosystem that can yield long-term rewards? So I'll give you a little sneak at one of the projects we're working on, and this will kind of illustrate the right way to do it in our opinion, and then how a lot of folks would traditionally approach it. So we're creating a children's book, and I won't get specific about what the target audience is, but it's a children's book aimed at kids with a certain disability. And so how a lot of DMOs would approach that is they would say, okay, we have copywriters, or our agency has copywriters. They can write a children's book. We have graphic designers. We can illustrate that children's book. And then we can put out the children's book, and we'll pay to place it in different places. So it's a paid ad where I might create the owned asset, but I'm still paying to get it in front of people. So we're taking a different approach, and we're saying, okay, we're going to go to the community that this is the target audience of and find an author that's already established as a children's book author and ask them, commission them to write a children's book around the subject that we're looking to write it about. And then we're going to find someone in that community that also illustrates children's books, and they're going to illustrate it, and we're going to pay them to do it. And then we're going to publish the book as a real book, not as an advertisement. Now, the book all the time is programming people, and it has Myrtle Beach as the backdrop, but that's not the primary purpose. The primary purpose is now we're building goodwill within this community, but we're also providing utility within this community. We're being helpful. And I know you had a guest on a few weeks ago, Annie, that was talking about this, being helpful, not, you know, helping, not selling.
Yeah.
And that's what we want to do with our content. We want to become content people choose to consume. We have to be helpful primarily. We have to help before we sell. So we're approaching this as if we're a media company or a publisher. And I really think, I believe this in my heart of hearts, that every brand out there today is becoming a media company. And every marketing team has to think of themselves as a media team first and foremost, because content is not just king, but it's everything. Everything you do is content in some form or fashion. Everyone is consuming content. And if you're not publishing great content, as things get more granular and more competitive, you're going to get lost in the shuffle. So you have to create content people want to, and choose to consume.
Yeah, I think what I hear you saying, Stuart, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that there's so many destinations out there creating content, but they might just be creating it for the sake of creating content. Yeah. When in fact, if you take a look at where you need to go, you build a much more intentional content roadmap that's going to help you get there without just being so in your face, come here, visit here, visit here.
Yeah, we as marketers have this tendency to take a checkbox mentality towards marketing, right? We say, okay, we've got to have a social channel. We've got to have a Facebook page. We've got to have a website. Check, that's done. We have to produce a video. Check, that's done. Without really stepping back and thinking about the why. Why are we doing what we're doing? What is our core purpose? How can we make a difference while we're doing this? And if you really have those deep philosophical kind of existential conversations, it really changes your focus. And, you know, I love the phrase where focus goes, energy flows, because it really sums up the fact that we have a choice of where to put our time. And we can all create time. We can all choose to do these things great. And I really reject the comment that a lot of folks make, which is, well, my team's too small. We don't have enough time. To me, it's about prioritizing. It's about figuring out what you should be spending your time on. There are great content creators out there. I mean, just go to TikTok or YouTube. These are kids with no money, no time other than, you know, they're in school all day. They maybe spend an hour or two, you know, a couple of times a week producing amazing content and building up these massive audiences without a single penny being spent. We as marketers need to adopt that kind of scrappy mentality as being content creators and publishers. And if we don't have the resources internally, go partner with people. You know, you had a gentleman on your show a few weeks ago from Orlando North Seminole County.
Guy Cunha.
Yeah, and he was talking about enlisting student athletes to be content producers for him. You know, that's a brilliant approach because it's not that expensive. It's a new direction or new evolution of influencers, but have them become content producers for you. You don't have to do it all yourself. Go find people in the community that are already being content producers and enlist them to be a partner with you.
Yep.
And to help them amplify them. Because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter if it's yours and you're creating every ounce of it, or if people are just telling the right story to encourage people to come to your destination. That's what really matters. So how do you become a catalyst to tell the stories by empowering content producers that are already producing content to do it the right way?
Great. Stuart, if you had to boil down your best piece of advice that you would give destinations that are listening into like 30 seconds, what would you say?
Stop thinking of yourself as a destination and start thinking of yourself as a brand. And if you do that, it really frees you up to start thinking about everything from a different perspective, from data collection to content generation. Everything is going to be able to be tackled with a fresh lens. We as an industry, and I've been kind of tangential to the destination industry from the hotel side for a while, but I feel like there's a lot of Me Too stuff going on. We are doing the same that they're doing. You know, I'm not talking about the social movement Me Too. I'm talking about me as well. I'm going to copy what everyone else is doing. And because everyone else has said they're doing a podcast, I'm going to do a podcast. And because everyone else says I'm doing this TikTok thing, I'm going to do this TikTok thing. Stop and think about why you're doing it. And what did your brand represent? What is the lifestyle that people that choose your destination are looking for when they come there? And really embrace that and tell great stories that consumers want to consume. If you do that, then the rest is just going to happen organically. People are going to come to your destination again and again, and they're going to become the future storytellers and do your work for you.
I love it. Stuart, where can people go to learn more about you and your destination?
Well, you can find me on LinkedIn as Stuart Butler. It's S-T-U-A-R-T. You can also find us at visitmodelbeach.com. We're getting ready to RFP our website. So if you guys want to throw your hat in the ring and anyone else out
Count us in.
we we've done a good job with the website we have. It's a little old, but we really want to become the utility for all people related to Myrtle Beach. We want people to be able to, you know, discover things they've not discovered before, plan when they haven't, you know, been here before. So someone like you, you know, you had this curated person that was helping you one-on-one. We want the website to be able to do that for anyone that's coming to Myrtle Beach for the first time. But we also want people, when they come to destination, to be able to use that website to figure out what they're doing and why they're doing it and when they're doing it and how best to do it, so that everyone that comes here has the greatest experience they can. They leave completely broke, but go home extremely happy, and then they come back again year after year.
Broken happy. That's the goal.
Yeah.
Well, Stuart, thanks so much for coming on, sharing a lot of your valuable insight with us. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's been my pleasure. I really have enjoyed your show. I think you do a great service to the industry with the insights. I've learned a lot, you know, coming into the industry for the first time, listening to a lot of people. The first thing I did when I knew I was coming over to the light / dark side, I decided I was going to go find the best podcast, and yours quickly rose to the top. There's two or three that I really like, and yours is one of them. So congrats on what you're doing. Best of luck, and thank you for having me.
Thanks a lot, Stuart. Really appreciate it. And thanks, everybody, for listening. We appreciate all our listeners, including Stuart. And if you enjoyed today's content, please make sure you leave us a rating or a review. It really does help us to continue to grow our audience and provide this show for the industry. So thanks, everybody, and we'll see you next week.
I've been getting a lot of questions recently from destinations around the world of, Adam, why does my destination need a podcast? You talk about it on your show, but why? The podcast format gives you the opportunity to tell that story in a unique way. And the most engaging form of advertising is storytelling. And that storytelling will allow the visitor to have a more well-rounded view of what they want to do when they get to the destination. And if you do an effective job of storytelling with your podcast, you get to access that audience through every stage of the funnel instead of renting an audience and not knowing which stage of the funnel that audience is in. So if any of you have considered doing a podcast, I would really look into it. It's the long game. I would look at what it takes to start one. We obviously have a product at Relic. Every destination needs to start today and do a podcast. You will reap the benefit over the next several years and years and years.